You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome into the Locked On Pacers podcast, where we talk about the Indiana Pacers 5 days a week. Today, we're going to preview tonight's game against the Detroit Pistons. As always, I'm one of the hosts of the show, Tony East, with the West Indianapolis Community News, and over at 8.9 seconds. And to help me talk Pistons, since it's the first time they play all year, we need a Pistons guy. We got Lazarus Jackson, the man, the myth, the legend from Detroit Bad Boys on the other line. Laz, how you doing, man?
I'm doing good. It feels like we had already played like four times this time last year, though, so this is weird.
Me and Adam went to the Pistons game. That was right after Christmas last year, and it was their last game against the Pistons of the whole year. It was so strange. They didn't play against Blake Griffin once last year.
That was the game Reggie Jackson got hurt, and my season ended.
It was? Yeah, pretty much. So before we start, I have to talk about a member of Pistons Twitter. David Fernandez just tweeted, best Pistons non-beat follows, and listed 10 guys, and none of them were Laz. And I think that is awful.
David rectified his mistake like 12 hours later, but it took him 12 hours. So I'm counting that one as a slight, and we're going to have a nice long discussion in the Slack chat.
We like David, but Laz is good. Laz is on the show for a reason, David. Come on.
Thank you, Tony. You're too kind.
So Laz, give me a one sentence to sum up the Pistons season so far.
They cannot make shots.
That is not a good way to play basketball.
Maybe it really is not.
You know what? I know Blake Griffin's really good, and then I check in on the Pistons when we're previewing the week, and I'm looking at his stats like, oh, my God, like 25-9 on really good efficiency. Like, how is this team not amazing? That's really good.
So they are bottom – they're like a bottom three team in three-point percentage in the league, and they shoot like the fifth or sixth most threes in the league. That's not a good combination. But it makes sense when you look at the roster. Reggie Bullock is a good three-point shooter. Luke Kennard is a good three-point shooter, but he's been in and out of the rotation. And then that's like pretty much the end of like the reliable three-point shooters on the team. It's been like a lot of Langston Galloway taking shots, a lot of Reggie Jackson taking threes. Reggie's taking the most threes in his career by like a very wide margin. Stanley Johnson shooting a lot of threes, which is not a great proposition. Guys like Bruce Brown are shooting. Blake is shooting threes, but he's shooting like 37% on six attempts a game, which is good. But like when he's like your second best or third best rotation player from three, that's not a good sign.
It seems they have a lot of guys that have a rep as an okay shooter, so it's weird that they're shooting bad.
They're shooting okay. It's just everyone's shooting like 33-34%. Like that's not good.
Well, and Stanley Johnson, who we know is not a shooter and never will be.
I am so ready to give up on Stanley, and it's exhausting.
Do you mean give up, like, not play him at all, or give up, like, not believe in a future and just assume he's just a solid defender?
Give up, like, trade him for, like, the Oubre package.
Okay.
Yeah, give me something close to that, and I'll be happy.
That exact trade could have been there, right? Like, Galloway, Stanley for Ariza.
Yeah, I would have done that trade. I don't know if Phoenix would have, but yeah.
So tell me something really good about the Pistons that isn't Blake Griffin or Andre Drummond. The length of that pause just saddened me.
The defense for like what feels like the fifth consecutive 11th year.
Defense. That's okay. That's fine.
They're a wavering on a top 10 defensive rating team, despite the fact that they have no like super above average defensive players on the roster, which is kind of impressive, all things considered.
That is good.
They've been really good at defending opponent 3-point percentage.
Oh, what are they?
They were top two last
they're
time.
They're first right now.
Yeah, number one. They're quite good at that. But that's not something you can control.
Kind of it is. The Celtics doing it like 4 years in a row means there's something to it, right?
I suppose.
That's always baffled me. But I feel like when I look, like maybe besides Reggie Jackson, like every rotation player, sans Drummond, is at least an okay perimeter defender.
Yeah, but none of them are. They're all between like a C plus and like a B level. And so, like, you wouldn't expect to cobble together a top 11 defense out of that.
That's true.
Yeah,
that's true.
And Blake has looked a lot worse defensively as of late. Blake appears to be wearing down, which is exactly what I was concerned about when we started giving him the ball like 80 bajillion times a game.
At least he's exerting all of his effort on offense.
True, true.
It's kind of what you need.
I will. The Pistons' last 20-point per game score before Blake was like Rip Hamilton in like 2009.
My God.
Yeah, it's been a long time. So we are thoroughly enjoying the Blake Griffin experience. Do not get me wrong.
Stanley Johnson's usage is 20%. That blows my mind.
He's been playing a lot of small ball four. I'll be curious to see how he matches up with either McDermott or Sabonis if they go to like bigger lineups. But that appears to be the role that like he should have been in all along. He's looked better. He hasn't shot better, but he's like looked more confident and more competent in that role offensively.
Yeah, that good segue into the game, Lance. Thank you for that. who's going to start? Who starts for the Pistons now?
So they were starting Reggie, Luke, Blake, Dre. Luke fell out of the rotation last night ostensibly because of the Wall-Beal matchup. Luke can't guard either of those guys. But Dwayne Casey has not seemed to have like mountains of confidence in Luke Kennard anyway. And so last night they started Reggie, Bruce Brown.
Wow.
The rookie out of Miami, Blake Adre. Second round pick, 42nd overall. Shooting 38% from three on the month, which is a welcome development, but also like he's like if he had missed one more three, he'd be shooting 33%, and I wouldn't bring it up at all. And so with the Pacers starting lineup, I would assume that you would actually see some Bruce Brown because they'd stick him on Oladipo. And so like yeah, Reggie, Bruce Brown, Blake Dre.
I looked up and down this roster and I was like, I feel like the defensive matchups, the Pacers just have something for everybody in your starting five.
Like, well, you guys, the Pacers are what, like a top six defense?
Top one.
Oh.
top uno, number one. Actually, they did not do well against the Hawks last. Yeah, they're second now. The Hawks, of all people, ruined their number one defensive rating.
Matt, Tony, do not get me started on the Atlanta Hawks. The Pistons For your Pacers listeners, the Pistons lost to the Hawks earlier this week in one of the worst displays of NBA basketball I've ever seen in my entire life.
So, you guys, what was it, like 98-95 or something?
No, it was 98-95, but that included like a 14-2 fourth quarter run to close the gap. Also, John Collins did not play.
Oh, geez.
Yes, it was bad.
So I was going to say, at least your game was in the 90s, like a Hawks game. The Pacers gave up 121.
To the Hawks?
The Hawks. They had to actually have like a good offensive game to beat the Hawks.
Who hit a bunch of the Hawks threes?
They shot 50% from three. The Hawks did. You're right about that. Good call. Yeah. Bazemore was hitting everything, and pretty much everybody except for Trae Young, who hilariously has not been a good shooter. But yeah, it was very odd. Their whole team was hitting everything. And the Pacers winning with offense just looks weird. The whole game was just weird.
So give it to me since the Pistons haven't played the Pacers this year. How have the Pacers looked offensively? I remember that there was some consternation about Tyreke Evans and the way that he had looked. There was a little bit of consternation about Doug McDermott not shooting. What else is going on?
My one word is fine, which isn't a great answer, but the half court offense is very unimaginative and blah. You get a lot of like throw it to a guy in the post and like haphazardly cut or walk around up high and create something, or you know, you run like a floppy set and if it's not there, it's just a pick and roll. Something nothing like, I mean, like Brad Stevens level creative is maybe too high of a bar, but nothing like even like Steve Clifford level creative. But they do get a lot of the we're so good on defense that we force misses and run level of offense, which they're very good at. So the whole package of offense is fine. But if you, like the Hawks showed, the Hawks were in that game for a long time. If you're hitting shots and forcing the Pacers to be in a half-court offense a lot, you can be in the game for a long time.
All right. The Pistons have an opposite but like an equally bad problem. They miss a lot of shots. They miss a lot of threes, and they're a terrible transition defensive team. So any long rebound just results in points. And so when they get into the half court, they're a much better defensive team. but they're a terrible transition defensive team. I have no idea why. I can't tell if it's communication or personnel.
New coach send in. Does he have like an? It's weird because transition defense is like shockingly a scheme, which I never would have thought.
Right. Well, because earlier, like, understand, they were better because they just like, okay, just let Dre handle the glass and just send four guys back, and you never give up any points. That's not the case anymore.
Steve Clifford is the opposite. Send everyone to the ball and pray you get the rebound.
With that Magic team, I understand why.
Yeah, that's true. They're awful. Yeah, and Dre, is he, you know, the rebounding thing for him is always like weird to me because he's clearly a very good and overlooked player. Like 18 and 15 is clearly very good, but like, where does the impact jump come from? You know, so, like why isn't he more impactful than Blake with those numbers?
The impact for him, the question has always been how he's been defensively, and the progression there has been uneven and slow, but it's been there. There was a 2-week stretch 2 weeks ago where he was looking really impactful defensively. That he followed up with just like some very lethargic games. Zaza got Blake and Dre sick, so like that was a fun like three games. If the impact has always been like whether or not he can be really really good defensively. He's scoring 18 points a game, which I think would be a career high for him now. But he's doing it on like the second or third highest usage on the team, if my memory is correct. And so like that's not great. You don't want your center taking like second on your team in shots if you can help it. But the Pistons can't really help it. He's their second best player.
It blows my mind that Blake Griffin has a higher shooting percentage than him, given that Drummond's shot profile is like 5 feet and in almost every time.
No, that's the problem. A lot of his shots come from like 3 to 10 feet instead of like right at the rim.
Hey, he hit 4 threes.
Did you see the step back three he hit over Karl Anthony Towns in the Minnesota game?
No, I've only seen I saw the very first three he hit where someone was like, the NBA is over if Drummond is shooting threes.
No, in an overtime win over Minnesota, he hit a step back three with the shot clock winding down over Karl Anthony Towns. And it was like, you should have heard George and Greg. It was like a minor miracle occurred in front of them. That was literally the reason they won that game.
I remember, was that the game where they went to overtime and Duncan Smith tweeted, this is the Pistons' 19th overtime game, and I completely fell for it. And it was like, yeah. No way. And I like looked up their schedule and stuff.
Yes, that was the game.
I don't know why I fell for that. That makes me feel so stupid. Like, there's no way. But it'd be so Pistons to be the team that has done that. So I guess maybe.
Yeah, it felt right. it made me double take for a second. Because I was like, okay, they had the Philly game. Yeah, one of the Boston games went to over. I was starting like counting on my fingers. I was like, okay, never mind. But.
So I have no issue in my head of thinking like Thad's going to guard Blake Griffin. Vic's going to guard whatever wing they think is most threatening. I don't know if you know who's going to start on the wing, but. You know, assuming it is the two you described earlier, Bruce Brown and Reggie Bullock, I'm assuming he'll be on Bullock. Mm-hmm. Bruce Brown has no off the dribble game at the moment, if I'm correct.
That is correct.
So we can stick Bojan there and call it a day. So is there a chance that Reggie Jackson going at Darren Collison is the best matchup for the Pacers or for the Pistons on offense?
There is a slight chance of that. Yeah. The coaching staff has been slowly discovering how best to leverage Reggie's skill set. At first, they were just like trying to make him Kyle Lowry, and he's not Kyle Lowry, and Blake isn't DeMar DeRozan. And so it's just like, okay, you stand here and shoot a bunch of threes, and that's not Reggie Jackson's game. They've been letting him attack more in the pick and roll as of late. He's looked more effective. He's still not he still doesn't take care of the ball as much as you would like, but at the same time, he's one of two guys on this team who can actually break down a half court defense and cause a rotation, cause a shift in any meaningful way. And so you can't just have him out there on the perimeter shooting threes. I would expect maybe a little bit of Bojan on Reggie just because Bruce Brown is so uninvolved in the offense and Bojan has good length and Reggie struggles against length.
And you could have Vic v. free safety Romer, which
bingo. Yeah. Or just, yeah, put Vic on Bruce Brown and let him play the LeBron role.
Yeah, they have him as that low man a lot. They do like that. So that is a good point. I like, yeah. Wow, look at you offering the Pacers insight here.
Well, so I have some questions. What have your bench lineups looked like offensively? Because like that's been the big differential when I noticed the Pistons can play well is when they can shut down the other team's bench and kind of cause gaps there, because the starting lineup has been so in flux and they never build any leads anyway that the bench has to build leads for the starters to protect. So how good are the Pacers bench offensively?
Their bench is pretty good overall because it's cohesive more so than anything. And it's only four dudes, so there's always a starter out there with them, which makes it hard to like truly evaluate their bench. But like Corey Joseph's going to guard the best ball handler. Tyreke Evans is going to be the guy who shoots late in the shot clock. Sabonis can do like literally everything on offense. And Doug McDermott spaces the floor, and like these clearly defined roles help. It makes everything go. And then whoever the fifth guy is, Bojan, Vic, Darren Collison, it depends. Thad is really good with that group. Thad's probably the best because he adds another defender in with Corey Joseph. You know, it just works because it's like that, where that's like the role is so obviously defined. There's not two overlapping guys, which I think is a big deal on the bench. And their offense is just kind of okay. It's kind of every Pacers thing on offense. It's like they're pretty good when they can get stops because they have good defenders out there. But Sabonis does a lot of the work there. His pick and roll game is exceptional. His passing out of the post is really good. You know, he's going left every time and he can score in the post. So I kind of run it a lot through him because Tyreke's been really struggling, but Tyreke played really well against the Hawks on Wednesday. So maybe they can have two offensive threats, but really a lot of it is just Sabonis will create everything for us, and he does a pretty good job of it, so it works.
All right, that makes sense. I'm worried about which bench big, John Lure or Zaza Pachulia, they use to guard Sabonis. If it's Zaza, that's going to go poorly. Like I already know. But if they're playing Sabonis at the five, that opens up like McDermott at four, and that's something that I don't think they'll handle very well. And I think that'll be something that will be in the Pacers' favor, because Stanley will play the four on offense, and then they'll stick him on the team's best perimeter player. So he'll guard Tyreke probably. And then that means someone like, I don't know, maybe Reggie Bullock, maybe Bruce Brown will be on Doug McDermott. And then if you're playing like Thad in like a bigger size lineup, they'll try and put Stanley on Thad, but then it'll be like Jose Calderon on Tyreke, which is bad. So yeah, I'm that's what I was curious about. Okay. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. The extra guy with the bench is usually Turner at first, so it's Turner Sabonis to close out the first quarter.
Okay.
Matchup dependent to start the second quarter, and the same way with third and fourth quarters usually. Okay. Notice TJ Leaf does not play.
does your boy Justin Holiday play?
Aaron Holiday, come on. Not really.
Holiday anymore. Season.
Tyreke hurt his knee last week, and Holiday played two games in his favor, and those were the two games they won last week, which was pretty funny. You're one of the few people who still makes fun of me for the Holiday thing, and I appreciate it. I need it. I need to be grounded for that horrible mistake.
Well, I mean, it's only because like I didn't know. I literally didn't know because I hadn't watched a lot of UCLA Holiday, and like now he seems good. He seems like a valuable contributor.
Yes.
Do you want to leave Corey Joseph for us to take? That'd be nice. We could use another guy. If
there are a lot of teams that want one of the point guards. To be fair, I'm like the Suns confuse me because in my head they should be wanting one of these guys, but then they get Austin Rivers and they're like, nah. I'm like, wait, what? Didn't you want a point guard for like months?
So when I watch the Suns more than I probably should, because I've been keeping an eye on Josh Jackson. Just because, like, I think that's a guy that if you want to buy low on, like, you should be doing that. But they're surrounding Booker and Aiden with just like 3 6'8" dudes, and it's working.
Oh, yeah, they have haven't they won like 4 or 5 or something?
Yeah, they looked really good against Orlando. Now they have a bunch of 6'8" dudes on the roster. They got Bridges, Oubre, Jackson, D'Anthony Melton Warren. is Warren. De'Anthony Melton is like bigger than you imagine he would be. It works.
Good thing the Pacers played him when they were still starting. I don't even remember who they like. What was his name? I can't even remember his name.
Rashawn Holmes?
No. They're tiny little point guard they waived. I forget his name.
Evans?
No, and I have to look at the Suns roster. Come on, Laz.
Oh, it wasn't.
Get it before I get there. I don't know what I'll do, but trying to.
It was not, what's his name? Devin Booker's best friend who they cut, Tyler Ulis. It wasn't Tyler Ulis.
Oh, there it is. Isaiah Kanan.
Oh, Isaiah Kanan still in the league.
Isaiah Kanan. Yes. Who has like a. He said 15 starts for them somehow.
Okay.
Back to Pistons. Always happens with the Pistons, Laz.
No, okay, so I want to ask you about the Pacers. Because you guys are already like pretty squarely locked into a playoff seed in the Eastern Conference, like what teams are you looking at during the regular season to like see their vulnerabilities in a playoff matchup?
Philly in the 4-5. Philly in the 4-5. If you get a top three seed, like I don't mean to poke this hard at the Pistons, but like you're playing Miami, Detroit, or Charlotte, right? Like you can easily beat any of those teams in the first round.
Or Brooklyn.
Or Brooklyn. Sure. Throw that into my point. Or Orlando. Okay, whatever.
No, Orlando's done.
I agree. Your first round matchup's not that hard. So it's really just who do you play in the second round at that point. Mm-hmm. But in that 4-5, whoever it's going to be, and I think pretty much everyone is going to pick Indy Philly, then you have to be looking at Philly and say, okay, how can we beat this team that is three stars and then a ginormous gap between their fourth best player, who is like Mike Muscala, maybe? I don't even know at this point in the season who their fourth best player is. So
J.J. Redick?
Yeah, that's probably it. So, I mean, come playoff time, obviously, when the game slows down and the stars are better, maybe they'll be better, but at the same time, they have one or two shockingly negative players on the court at all times. So, you know, keeping an eye on them is interesting. Who just wrote the big profile on them about their weaknesses after Christmas Day? I need to read that.
Was that Jackson Frank?
No, it was ESPN. But Frank, I do follow him. He does a great job covering.
Yeah, he does a good job with Philly. I would be worried because Philly has two, they have Simmons and Butler to throw at Oladipo.
Yes, they do.
And so you always have, 48 minutes of that.
They have the solution in Tyreke Evans.
You just got through telling me how Tyreke Evans isn't playing.
I know. I hate it. And like they signed him, and everyone in Pacerland and National Land, including me, was like, "Yes, this is great. This is
it." No, it was great. It's still great. It's a 1-year deal.
I know. Even if that was why I liked it so much. I was like, even if this doesn't work, like, great. See ya.
Yeah. So
he was awesome against the Hawks. Like. Awesome. 19-5, only one turnover, hit all of his threes. His scoring average went up by like half a point per game. Like he was really good in that game. And I'm just like, gosh, like my thing with Tim, I don't know if you read this. I just wrote about how bad he's been. Has always been like the Spurs rule for him needs to be the thing, you know, like 0.5 seconds, do something. Don't just stand there and hold the ball. And he did that. And he was really good against the Hawks. And I want him to do that every game. I think that could take him to being the guy who helps them beat the Sixers.
If you're not the Pistons, playing the Hawks is definitely good for your offensive profile.
The first time the Pacers played the Hawks is when Oladipo got hurt, and they had Aaron Holiday.
The Aaron Holiday game?
Aaron Holiday game, yeah. So every time they play the Hawks, something good happens. It's crazy.
Yeah.
What is the Pistons' best win of the year?
The best win of the year? Probably the Toronto game.
Or the Warriors. Yep. I forgot they beat the Warriors.
No, the Warriors game. So I'm going to talk about the Toronto game, and then
Go. You can talk about the Toronto game in a second. They've beaten Toronto and Boston and the Warriors and the Rockets, and they're 16-16.
I don't think they've beaten Boston.
They have.
Oh, that's right. They did. Okay. Yeah.
They have.
Right. The second.
What the hell, man?
They've lost to Atlanta and they've lost to Charlotte three times already. We've played Philly four times and only one. And it took Blake scoring 50 points for us to beat Philly once. So, no, the Toronto game was probably the best one of the season because of what it meant to Casey happening in Toronto. the way it happened, fourth quarter comeback, Stanley Johnson just like switching bodies with OG Anunoby and like shutting down Kawhi Leonard in the clutch. And then Dwayne Casey, who's been criticized for his lack of offensive creativity and not being able to draw stuff up out of bounds, draws up a game-winning out-of-bounds play. It's like, that's pretty good.
The play he used to drop with the Raptors a lot, and everyone was super psyched that it beat them, right?
Yeah, that was it.
I remember that.
The Warriors win was a good win, but it was a very strange win because if the team they were playing against weren't wearing Warriors jerseys, you would have never expected them to lose the game.
Touché.
Yeah, it was a lot of like Klay Thompson 18 footers.
6 for 26 from three for the Warriors that game.
Yeah, Steph got like mildly hot late in the third, and then like nothing ever materialized. They just like held on to the game the entire time. It was really strange. It felt like a win over, I don't know who's a good team. It felt like a win over like Portland, where it's like, oh, okay, they're just playing well, and the other team's not playing as well, and they're just gonna win. But like it's the Warriors, so you always have the fear in the back of your mind that like, oh, KD's gonna score 10 points in 2 minutes, and this game's gonna be over.
Okay, I made it a half hour. I told myself we'd talk about enough Pacers Pistons for a half hour before I asked. Glenn Robinson, our boy.
Oh man.
Oh, that's not what I like to hear.
Finish the question.
In theory, in my head, I thought, good for the Pistons, man. They got a quality defender and shooter, something they need on the wing. Jared 3 was fine for the Pacers last year. He pretty much had two seasons. The first 11 games, he was useless. And then the second 11 games, he was kind of similar to his 2016-17 form. So I thought, okay, yeah, maybe he can be that guy we thought he could be 2 years ago. How has Glenn Robinson looked in Detroit?
GR3 has been hurt for the last couple of weeks. He tweaked his ankle against in the final Philly game. But before that, he was the nominal fifth starter and not playing super well. Just not very aggressive offensively, very tentative on offense. A litany of defensive problems culminating in a game where just like Paul George absolutely eviscerated him in that Monday night game, players only game. It's like not only did I have to watch Paul George like kill my team, I had to listen to Greg Anthony like not pay attention like as it was happening the entire time. So that was fun. But no, GR3 has not been what I hoped he would be, but maybe closer to what it was reasonable to expect for him to be.
Pacers fans were too high on him. The bar was kind of low for him in 16-17 because it was like, okay, you're Monte Ellis's replacement. Like,
right.
The bar is don't be an asshole and turn it over on the third possessions.
The bar for him is still low. The bar for him is still just like, hey, can you make open threes when Blake passes you the ball? And like he couldn't do that, or he wouldn't shoot them. Or it's like, hey, can you take two dribbles and like get into the paint and like shoot a 10-foot floater that Andre Drummond can offensive rebound for a dunk? And he wouldn't even do that. So it was just
seems like he should be better, and I can't figure out why he's not, because
very tentative from what I can tell so far.
Because
but I still got hope, though.
Well, he does so many like if you're a process guy over results, you know, you watch GR3 for the Pacers 2 years ago, and he's doing all these little things well, like closing out and cutting and making the right pass, and his three balls going in at like almost a 40% clip, and then you look and he's averaging like 5-1-1, and you know, and no one who isn't watching the team every game is going to be like, yeah, that guy's awesome,
right? So. Well, then you look. And you're shooting like a 3.5 per game at a 40% clip. And you're like,
yeah,
you should shoot more.
More. But it doesn't happen. And I don't, maybe he's another guy that's going to get caught in the, like, what he should be will never quite be what he is. But to me, I thought the Pistons were actually a good spot for him because they needed shooting and wing defense. He could get big minutes and help. But 16 minutes a game and not good stats suggest that that was wrong of me to think.
It was wrong for me to think as well. But, you know, maybe he'll come back from this ankle injury. They still do need minutes from guys on the wing, as see our earlier Bruce Brown discussion. And so, like, maybe he can find a spot still in the rotation. and just he won't. Maybe he'll be more comfortable offensively when he's playing with the bench instead of the starters. That's like kind of the last remaining hope for him.
Well, and you can say this: he's not going to continue to shoot under 30% from three. That's just not going to happen.
Yeah, he's probably not. No.
So that is good, and he's hitting his free throws when he gets to the line once every other game. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
So he does some things okay, just not enough. It's not good.
All right, so now I got a question for you.
Ooh, let's go.
All right, now that you guys are solidly like a top 4 or 5 team in the Eastern Conference, what's the next step looking like in the offseason for the Indiana Pacers? Is it bringing back Tyreek? Is it bringing in, like, is it like going super hard after like a Chris Middleton to take away from one of the teams above you? Is it like we're just going to kind of wait it out or resign like Thad and Bojan? Like, what's going on?
I appreciate you saying summer. A lot of people, and I understand why, like you play to win and they're good, want to trade to get a good guy now. I don't think that they, you know, they plan to have all this money in the upcoming summer just to trade for a guy. So I don't think they're going to do anything like that, except maybe like trade an expiring for like a slightly better expiring. That's the only thing I can see happening before the summer. You know, it's funny. I'm going to lock in on a former Piston here. If the Clippers truly are going for Kevin Durant and Kawhi Leonard, the cap casualty is Tobias Harris, and he would be awesome for the Pacers. And he's always been the guy I kind of zeroed in on. He could play 3 and 4, so then you could bring back one of Bojan or Thad. He can shoot from the outside. He's not good on D, but he's not bad on D. And he can score off the dribble. He would be a huge help to this team. And if they do have those lofty goals in L.A., like I just said, he'd be imminently available because they could not use his bird rights to re-sign him. And then before Milwaukee made that savvy George Hill trade, I always thought, okay, whichever one they don't keep between Brogdon, Bledsoe, Middleton, get that guy. But now they have the money to keep all three, so I don't think that is possible anymore. So it's kind of just like they're going to have to overpay for a B-list star. It's how the Pacers are. So it's going to be who is that guy, and then I think it's after that it'll be keeping the right guys, which to me is Corey Joseph, Bojan, and Thad. But I'm not sure how they go about it.
No, that's fair. And like
Tyreek and Darren Collison is gone, like gone. Tyreek could, in theory, like get better and find a way back on less money, but Darren Collison is gone.
I've kept an eye on Darren Collison only because Ish isn't expiring and Jose Calderon is 37 years old. And like if you can sign like Darren Collison for the biannual, like you should totally do that, Detroit.
Wow, you'd be thinking he's gonna be. I mean, he's gonna get way less than he's making right now next summer, but that low, you think?
I don't know, man. Like, there's gonna be so many free agents this summer.
That's true.
Some guys are just gonna get crunched, and I think it's a possibility that he is one of them.
But to me, it's like why don't the Magic just be like, here's $5 million to finally be our best point guard since 2010?
Well, then I mean, then they just have like two DJ Augustins, right? Like,
no, he's better than Well, actually, it's an even year, so DJ Augustine's good this year, odd year, right? Every other year for him or something like that.
He's been good this year, yeah.
He has been good this year. Maybe like the Knicks. It's like we have to stop playing Moutier, Trey Burke, throw a dart at the wall, who's going to be good tonight. Like,
I cannot let you savage my boy Moutier. He's been playing much better.
I don't know. It's certainly possible. I'm not saying you're wrong. It's like someone is going to be like, here's an okay 1 year deal to not suck. Because we had sucky guys like
because we need a competent point guard. Yeah.
Here, you can go back to the Kings where you've played half your career and be Darren Fox's backup. Here's $5 million.
That's actually not bad. I kinda like that. It would enable the Kings to play like 40 minutes of blur, which is what they want to do.
Yes, it is. But yeah, that is my summation of what the Pacers will try to do. I'm pretty confident they will go for. They'll do what they always do. They'll try to get a shooter and another shooter, and they'll try to get like a B-list free agent because they're, you know, everyone's going to be like Jimmy Butler, but Jimmy Butler will not play for the Pacers. You know, it's just stuff like that just doesn't happen.
Yeah.
So who is that guy? I don't know. I think the Middleton, Tobias Harris, maybe Bledsoe if he's actually this good, but it's not. It's just a contract year.
Under Budenholzer.
Yes, and under for that too. That level of guy, I think, is where they'll swing hard, but I don't know who they'll get. Or maybe they'll just like Kemba, here is this and a trade kicker and blah, 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 and please.
But, oh, you didn't hear? Kemba's going to be a Laker.
Okay. Yeah. So is Prime Olajuwon, and it's so frustrating.
Will, I hate the same Kareem, the Shaq, same. Zubac.
Yeah. He's very good. I watched him on Christmas Day, and I was like, what the heck? Like, this guy's not a bad NBA player. Where did
A couple days before, he, like, blocked AD at the rim on an oop. And I was like, yeah. Oh.
How did he get up that high?
Yeah.
He looks like he should have no vertical. Yeah, I think this is one of the worst things I do. I confuse him and Ante Zizic too much.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Is Ante Zizic is on the Cavs. Yeah. Okay, yeah.
So I was like, oh, Zubac. Like, yeah, did they get him in the Isaiah Thomas trade? And that's like, different player.
Nope.
That was wrong.
Eastern European guy.
Man, it's a shame because the same people who are like, I hate super teams, they're like, get Anthony Davis and LeBron together. I'm like, wait. No.
Oh, I have the Zach Lowe Anthony Davis thing open like right now. I'm going to read it as soon as we're done. Only because the Pelicans just lost to the Mavericks last night and they're like 14th in the West at this point, and like, so it could implode very quickly.
No, they're going to trade Solomon Hill and a first for a mediocre guy and get the 8th seed. And then he'll leave.
Oh no. You know what's funny? You know who they could really use?
Oh, don't tell me. Oh man. Someone they traded away. Buddy Hield.
Yep. Oh, I was gonna say, oh, you got it. Oh.
It has to be someone straight away. Buddy Hield's 26, man. That's crazy. That's a crazy story. Because in my head, it's like, if they know that he's actually a year older, they for sure draft Jamal Murray, right?
Oh, I didn't think about that. Didn't their ownership group like really like Hield?
Because
never mind. I don't know. I don't think Murray is that good, though.
I'm higher on Murray. I had Murray pretty high that year.
I think Murray is like a modern-day Lou Williams, right? Like, if you look at Lou Williams's early career and been like, hey, you should shoot 8 threes a game instead of 3 threes a game, like, you would have gotten Jamal Murray. And, like, that's not a bad player, but I don't know if I want that guy at, like, 7 overall or wherever he got drafted.
That draft was not great, though.
No, it was not.
The draft was not very good. Yeah, I think it says a lot that they like Monte Morris, who was on a 2-way last year, for close to Jamal Murray's minutes.
Oh, you'll like this. I knew Monte Morris was good when I watched him drag a like 8-deep a roster of scrubs to a Michigan high school basketball championship. And in Breslin. I was like, oh my God, this kid's good.
I love that we're doing this. Last night during the Pacers game, we were talking about Chris Dunn. For some reason, I was with a bunch of friends downtown at a bar. And one of them said they saw Chris Dunn's AAU team playing Indy. And he was on the same AAU team as Andre Drummond.
Chris Dunn. God.
They seem like they're like different tiers of age. But Chris Dunn and Andre Drummond are on the same AAU team.
So some Pistons fans want to trade like Reggie and Stanley for like Chris Dunn and Jabari Parker.
Oh my God!
Yeah, that's where we are right now. But if you did that though, you could run out a lineup of like Chris Dunn, Bruce Brown, Stanley Johnson, Blake and Dre, and score like 60 points per 100 possessions.
And Blake would have 58 of them.
Right? It'd be great.
Maybe Chris Dunn and Andre Drummond could rekindle their fire from high school.
From AEU.
On the AEU circuit, bring it back to Detroit. I have to shout out Ben Jones for remembering that one. He knows more about basketball than me. It's a shame he doesn't like write or anything. that's a fun group. Okay, that was a lot of Pistons talk, even though we got distracted again. Who do you picture winning this game? Because normally that sounds like a loaded question, like the better team at home, duh. But the Pistons actually play well against the Pacers historically. So I would, you know, maybe it'll be closer than I think.
Nothing about the way the Pistons have been playing for the last week and a half leads me to believe that they will win this game. Okay. So the Pacers.
Okay.
Of course, that always means that, like, you know, maybe Reggie Bullock scores 33 points again and they win. And I'm just like, why can't this team ever be consistently good? For the second year in a row, the Pacers are having the season I had hoped the Pistons would have, where they're just consistently good defensively, effective offense that looks ugly but puts the ball in the basket, which is all I really care about, and like having their star guy lead them to victories that they otherwise maybe shouldn't have gotten.
Pacers strategy is to have no bad players in the rotation. And I mean, depending on your thoughts on McDermott, I think they don't have any bad players in the rotation. But I look at the Pistons and I think, yeah, they got two or three bad players in the rotation. So
yeah, basic competency is underrated.
Yes. Yes, exactly. Basic competence. That's what I'm naming the title of this podcast. Basic competence is underrated. Pistons preview.
You're welcome.
If Zaza injures any Pacers, you're never coming on the show.
Fair.
That is my closing argument.
I'm not hoping for that. John Wall was very unhappy with Zaza last night.
I'm always unhappy with Zaza. He's actually like an underratedly effective player in his 10 minutes a game, but he is a scrub with the injury stuff.
He is a like five-man lineup darling. Like you can put like any four dudes around Zaza and come up with like a half decent positive net rating. You have no idea how it happens, but the numbers quite clearly say like, oh hey, if you put like him, Jose Calderon, John Lewis, Langston Galloway, and Stanley Johnson on the floor together, they're like plus 12. Like how? I don't know.
Starting five, baby. Chalk it up. All right, Laz, I appreciate you taking time out of the holidays. Come on.
No, Tony, as always, I love talking to you. It's great to be on the podcast. Thank you for having me.
Is this our fourth show together?
Something like that. Yeah.
Done a lot. I've had a lot of Pistons people. You, Matt, Shud, Sham.
We're good people to talk to. It's a shame our team sucks, so no one wants to.
Promised days are near. With your limited assets and one star.
In 2020, we're going to rebuild the entire team around Blake and Dre in 2020. If you look at the cap sheet, that's like the natural ending point for the current roster.
Good. That'd be great. You want to promote anything before you get out of here?
All your listeners should obviously go to Detroit Bad Boys for Pistons analysis whenever it's relevant. They should download and subscribe to the Detroit Bad Boys podcast, which is the podcast that I host. Tony is a not infrequent guest on that podcast, and so you'll get that, and you'll enjoy that. And they should follow me on Twitter at Laz Chance. That's at LazChance. I'm pretty funny.
Laz is a great Pistons follow. There are a lot of great Pistons follows. You'll enjoy following Laz and the Pistons as they struggle their way to the 41-win 8 seed.
I had us winning 43.
Actually, 41 wins is probably the 6 seed in the East, so I should give them some credit.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point.
All right, man. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me, Tony.
Glad here. We'll be back tomorrow or Saturday. It'll be Adam talking about this game as well as looking ahead to the other Hawks game they have this week on New Year's Eve. Thank you guys for tuning in, and we'll see you next time on the Locked On Pacers podcast.